Good to see everyone who is willing and able to come back this afternoon to study another portion of God's Word. We're going to be talking about the seventh chapter of the Gospel of Mark this afternoon. This is continuing the chapter study I started some weeks ago. And we want to look at particular things that happened in the life of Jesus as he's going about his ministry. One of the things I find informational and fascinating when you go back and study the Gospels chapter by chapter is to dig into some of the minutiae of the things that happened and to kind of get a deeper understanding of the culture in which Jesus is living in and teaching in. It's kind of relevant to what Scott had to tell us today about being aware of your surroundings and letting your conscience guide you and trying to help other people adapt that same kind of attitude. It's just kind of interesting to see the things that were happening and transpiring and how they affected the things that Jesus taught and the things that he did. The timing of this particular portion of Mark's gospel as it's been translated and set up in chapter and verse. This takes place right around the end of Jesus' Galilean ministry. And it's right around this time that we find over in the gospel of Mark in the sixth chapter is when Jesus gave the discourse about how his followers would have to eat his body and drink his blood. And if you'll remember over there, John tells us that many of Jesus' disciples didn't follow him from that point forward because this saying that he had was hard for him to understand. And Jesus has kind of reached the height of his popularity, and now the scribes and the Pharisees are going to kind of start putting more and more pressure on him to try to discredit him. And some of his followers are becoming skeptical of what exactly it is that he's going to do. Many of the Bible historians think to some extent that the apostles initially joined Jesus because Jesus was talking about being a king and establishing a kingdom. And of course, this was something that all the Jews were looking for. The prophecies of the Messiah that had been given in the Old Testament said that the Messiah was going to come and establish a kingdom. And they were all looking for a physical kingdom. And of course, we realize that the kingdom that Jesus came to establish was not of this earth. It was a spiritual kingdom. And so at this point in time, Jesus is about 2.5 years into his ministry, and some of the people that might have thought that he was planning on raising an army so that he could establish this kingdom realize that Jesus is not a man of war, that that's not what his intentions are. And so because some of his followers are becoming confused, they're not following him with the zeal that they once did, although he still has the popularity as he goes from town to town, healing that multitudes of people still come out to see what it is that he has to do. But we see Jesus in this chapter, as we mentioned in some of the others before, seeking some solitude and some alone time is what we call it in today's culture, to be with the apostles and to prepare them because he knows that they're going to have to carry on the work of spreading the gospel after he is crucified, resurrected, and ascends back up into heaven. So we'll begin our study this afternoon, by reading the first 13 verses of Mark chapter 7. And I'm going to use a few other scriptures, and I put the page number for the Pew Bibles up there. So if anybody wants to follow along in the Bible that we provide here, and all the scriptures I'm going to read are from the King James translation. Beginning in verse 1, Mark chapter 7. Then came together unto him the Pharisees and certain of the scribes which came from Jerusalem. And when they saw some of his disciples eat bread with defiled, that is to say, with unwashed hands, they found fault. For the Pharisees and all the Jews, except they wash their hands off, eat not, holding the tradition of the elders. And when they come from the market, except they wash, they eat not. And many other things there be which they have received to hold as to the washing of cups, and pots, brazen vessels, and of tables. When the Pharisees and scribes ask him, Why walk not thy disciples according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands? He answered and said unto them, Well hath Isaiah prophesied of you hypocrites, as it is written, The people honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Howbeit in vain do they worship me, teaching their doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of God, ye hold the tradition of men, as the washing of pots and cups, and many other such like things ye do. And he said unto them, Full well ye reject the commandment of God, that ye may keep your own tradition. For Moses said, Honor thy father and thy mother, And whoso curseth father or mother, let him die the death. But ye say, if a man shall say to his father or mother, it is Corban, that is to say, a gift, by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by me, he shall be free. And ye suffer him no more to be aught for his father and or his mother, making the word of God of none effect through your tradition, which ye have delivered, and many such like things do ye. So as Jesus began to become more and more popular amongst the Jews, this stirred up quite a bit of jealousy among the scribes and the Pharisees, and this caused them to accelerate their retribution in trying to get back with Jesus, and how many times they would question him in the marketplace, or they would try to trick him with various questions that they thought would cause him to stumble and say something that they could bring before the Sanhedrin and get Jesus killed so that he would not be a thorn in their flesh anymore. But Jesus always answered them correctly and often showed them for the lack of understanding and the lack of faith that they had. Their problems with Jesus were many. They did not believe that he was the Messiah. They believed the statements he made about the authority that he had from God and his ability to forgive sins. They considered blasphemous. They were also offended by Jesus' constant criticism of them and his disregard for their traditions. They were unhappy with Jesus because of the fact that he shunned the scribes and the Pharisees and preferred to spend time amongst the publicans and the sinners. And so they had a lot of things that they were unhappy about that Jesus was doing, and so they sought any opportunity they could to try to discredit him. On this particular occasion, the scribes and the Pharisees call out Jesus because his disciples did not wash their hands before they ate. Now, this offense to them had more to do with a spiritual commandment, or a commandment that they had come about by the doctrines of men. It was more about spiritual washing than physical washing or physical hygiene. And so it says here that one of the things it talks about is the phrase, wash their hands off. I always took that to mean wash their hands often, but that's not what that word oft, O-F-T, means. It correctly translated, it means to wash with the fist. And so they were so wrapped up in the minutiae of these laws that they had kind of imposed upon themselves that they didn't feel like they could wash their hands like most people wash their hands. They rub their palms together to clean them. They would take their fist and wash one hand, and they'd take their fist to wash the other hand, so that their palms stayed clean. And so they had all kinds of little regulations and rules like this that they observed, and they expected everybody else to observe them as well. In the generations leading up to Jesus coming into the world, we realized that the Jews had broken into different sects. At one time, the Jews were all kind of the same, much like in the beginning, Christians were all the same. As we know, there's a lot of digression in the Christian world today, and so among the Jews, there are also different groups that kind of broke off and had different beliefs. The Sadducees were a group of the Jews that didn't believe in the resurrection. They believed that once your life on earth ended, your existence was over. And the Pharisees were very strict, and there were other groups that had different and various beliefs. The scribes, as we read about in the New Testament, didn't actually appear amongst the Jewish people until around 500 BC. And an adequate description of the scribes are those who have a passion for definition. They took the general principles of the old law and broke them down to cover every possible situation. And these doctrines eventually became known as the traditions of the elders, or the oral law. Between around 200 to 300 AD, these were actually written down and compiled in a writing that's known amongst the Jews as the Mishnah. And these were things that Jesus condemned when he talked about them in Matthew chapter 23. And we're going to read a few verses from Matthew 23, beginning in verse 1. Then spake Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. All therefore whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do, but do not ye after their works, for they say and do not. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. The Jews had reached a point when Jesus began his teaching where many of them were kind of fed up with their religion. They had been, so many of these things had been placed upon them, and so many things that they were supposed to do and not do that were additions that men made to the laws that Moses had been given by God through Moses, that it became almost like their religion became a burden to them. And so they did it out of, they didn't really do it out of love. They just kind of kept following along to keep from people bothering them, basically. And so they didn't have the right attitude about their religion. That's one of the things that Jesus had against the scribes and the Pharisees, that they were forcing people into a sort of submission and a sort of religion that didn't come out of love. The elders mentioned in these verses are not the officials of the temple, but the originators of this oral tradition as the scribes and the Pharisees came into power and influence. The biblical historian Barclay gives a few examples of the fanatical extent to which some of the Jews would observe these traditions. And I want to read from a commentary that I have here that was written by Carl Johnson, someone we've had here speak before us before. He wrote a commentary on Mark, and it says, "Bread eaten with unclean hands was no better than excrement. A rabbi who once omitted the ceremony was buried in excommunication. Another rabbi, imprisoned by the Romans, used the water given to him for hand washing rather than for drinking, and in the end nearly perished of thirst because he was determined to observe the rules of cleanliness rather than satisfy his thirst." And so they became real sticklers of the minutiae of the law, that, and so much so that they got away from what it was that really God intended for them to do. And Jesus responds to their hypocrisy by quoting from Isaiah chapter 29 and verse 13. He said that their worship was vain and empty because it did not proceed from the heart. They put more importance on their traditions and on the actual law. And so Jesus then cites a specific, let me back up just a second. It is said that the scribes and the Pharisees of Jesus' day had broken down the law that had originally been given to Moses into 613 different decrees, 365 which were prohibitions of things that the Jews were not to engage in or partake of, and 248 that were positive directives. And so they had kind of broken it down, and it kind of reminds us of some of the laws that we see in our country today, where somebody does something and they go to jail for what seems like nothing, or they escape jail time for a heinous crime because of some technicality. And that's about what the Jews had done with the law of God at this point, is they had just put their own hand in it and done everything they could to make it hard and grievous to follow. And they wielded their power and knowledge of it to their advantage. And that's one of the reasons why they did not like Jesus, because Jesus pointed out the hypocrisy of what they did. And so Jesus here cites a specific example of how their traditions contradicted what the law had taught for generations. The fifth of the Ten Commandments that was given by God to Moses was, "Honor thy father and thy mother." This doesn't simply mean to obey your parents, but to show them love, respect, and consideration. And if a child did not do this, and they were old enough to understand the consequences, if they didn't, they would be taken outside the camp or the city and stoned to death. And that is found in Exodus 21 and 17 and Leviticus 20 and 9. So that was a death sentence under the old law for a child to disobey or disrespect their parents. And so this was something that Jesus said is something very serious. But he condemned the scribes and Pharisees because of this word Corban. And that word in Hebrew means that which is brought near, a gift, offering, oblation, anything consecrated to God. And it's what the scribes and the Pharisees were doing, where they were using this idea of Corban as an excuse to keep from giving their parents, basically their parents that were in need, financial need, money or any kind of help or assistance. They would declare that the property that they had, or maybe some money that they had set aside, was Corban, or that it had been dedicated to God, and so they couldn't use it for any other purpose. And this was a lie because they were doing that anyway. It kind of reminds us of the situation that happened with Ananias and Sapphira over in the book of Acts when they told Peter they were going to sell a piece of property and give the money to the congregation. Well, they kept some of the money, and Peter said, there's nothing wrong with you doing that, but that's not what you said you were going to do. And in those days, a vow was something that was very serious, so much so that once a person made a vow, they couldn't go back on it. And one of the stories we remember from the Old Testament that reminds us of this is the story of Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel, how the people were against Daniel, some of the priests of Nebuchadnezzar. So they went and convinced the king to make a law that you couldn't pray to any other god but their pagan gods. And, of course, when Daniel knelt down and prayed, he was arrested and he was thrown in the lion's den. And Nebuchadnezzar didn't want to see Daniel dead, but because he had already made this vow or this decree, he couldn't take it back. And so once the Pharisees had pretended to make this vow of this money or this property, then they could go and tell their parents, I can't help you because I don't have anything. All I have set aside, I've already dedicated to the temple. And so Jesus condemns them for this because he knows they're not doing what they say they're doing, and he's showing them how their tradition has supplanted what the commandment says. The commandment of God should be first, and any kind of tradition that comes after that should not be held in any kind of regard if it contradicts the law of Moses, which is what they were living under, but they tried to find a way around it. And again, this reminds us of so many things that we see in our society today, how the rules that are made seem to apply to some people and other people they don't. That's not how it's supposed to work. That's the way God never intended his law to work, and yet the scribes and the Pharisees have tried to find a way around it that helps them. I'd like now to continue with reading Mark chapter 7. We'll continue in verse 14. And when he had called all the people unto him, he said unto them, hearken unto me, every one of you, and understand. There is nothing from without a man that entereth into him can defile him, but the things which come out of him, those are they that defile the man. If any man have ears to hear, let him hear. And when he was entered into the house from the people, his disciples asked him concerning the parable. And he saith unto them, are you so without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatsoever thing that from without entereth into a man, it cannot defile him, because it entereth not into his heart, but into the belly, and goeth out into the draught, purging all meats? And he said, that which cometh out of the man, that defileth the man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile the man. Jesus here uses this opportunity to enlighten the multitude of people that are there to kind of teach them what uncleanness really was. The Jews' concept was that if you didn't wash your hands or you didn't wash the food you were about to eat, that some way that was going to defile you. And certainly there are ways that you can be poisoned or get sick from food that isn't clean or eating with dirty hands. But we're not talking about physical now. We're talking about spiritually, because that's what all these washings of the Pharisees were about. They weren't about being physically clean. They were about being spiritually clean. And so Jesus is telling them, it's not what goes into you that defiles you, but it's what comes out of you. And we realize that under the laws of Moses, there were strict dietary laws that the Jews had to follow. There were many kinds of sea life and pigs and other things that they couldn't eat that were spiritually unclean. Under the new covenant, we realize that whatever goes into a person doesn't defile them. It's what comes out. Jesus names several different sins here that come from within a man. And this reminds us of the writing over in James chapter 1, beginning in verse 13. James 1, beginning with verse 13. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Sometimes when we're out in the world, we can't help but hear evil things. We certainly need to use our conscience, as God talked about this morning, and avoid things that are evil. But sometimes you can't help hearing those things or seeing them. but you cannot let them influence you. When I was a kid, and sometimes my wife also will claim that I'm somebody, is like when you say something to me, it goes in one ear and out the other. And as Christians, that's the kind of how we need to be. We need to filter out all the bad influences that we come across and not let them fester inside us, because as James says, once that sin has been conceived in our heart, if we're not careful, it'll eventually come out and we'll actually commit a sin that we're thinking about. And so we have to use our conscience and our common sense to govern us, and when we're influenced by those things, to make sure that they're not a part of us, because if we let them come out, then that's going to cause us, not only cause us to sin, it's going to hurt other people, and it may influence other people that are watching us to sin as well. So we have to be very careful about that and realize that if we if something gets into our life that causes us to think these things, that we go to God with it and make sure that we get it taken care of before it can get out and become worse. And so that's why Jesus is telling them the importance of keeping themselves clean spiritually, not to worry so much. Hygiene is important, but the idea here is to focus on staying spiritually clean. We'll continue reading now with verse 24. From thence he arose and went into the borders of Tyre and Sidon, and entered into a house, and would have no man know it, but he could not be hid. For a certain woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard of him, and came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by nation, and she besought him that he would cast forth the devil out of her daughter. But Jesus said unto her, Let the children first be filled, for it is not meet to take the children's bread and to cast it into the dogs. And she answered and said unto him, Yes, Lord, yet the dogs under the table eat of the children's crumbs. And he said unto her, For this saying, Go thy way, the devil is gone out of thy daughter. And when she was come to her house, she found the devil gone out, and her daughter laid upon the bed. Many times we talk about the fact that Jesus came to bring the gospel to the Jews. That was the primary focus of his ministry. And yet from time to time we find Jesus dealing with Gentiles, and often being surprised by their ability to have the faith the Jews should have had. And sometimes this is born out of a circumstance. In this case, this woman is desperate. Her child is possessed by a demon, and she's no doubt probably tried everything else. And she hears this man, this Jewish man, Jesus, is in the area, and he's one that's been known to heal people or to cast out demons. And so she goes to him and asks him to heal her daughter. And the statement that Jesus makes here is kind of something you wouldn't expect Jesus to say, to call somebody a dog, but that's kind of what he did. He said that it was not meet to give the food that was meant for the children to the dogs. Now, the kind of a dog that he's talking about here actually comes from a Greek word. Sorry, give me a second. I lost my place. It's a Greek word, canarion, which sounds kind of like canine, K-U-N-A-R-I-O-N, which means like a little dog or a pet, not the kind of scavenger dogs that were often associated with sinful behavior. And so one of the interesting things that Jesus says here, he knows this woman is a pagan, he knows she's Greek, yet he's impressed by her faith, and he says that the children's first, he didn't say it's for the children, that the meat was for the children only. He said it was for the children first. And this is kind of like what we call a spoiler in today's society. Somebody doesn't want to know the end of a movie or a book, they say, don't spoil it for me. But what Jesus is kind of setting up here is the idea that eventually that the New Testament was not only going to be just for the Jews, but it was going to be for the Gentiles also. And that's further indicated by this idea that the woman says, yes, but the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the children's table, meaning that they would take advantage of any blessing that they could get. And so Jesus recognizes the wisdom and the foresight that this woman has, and her ability to see what a lot of the Jews haven't been able to see is the blessings that he offers. And so he tells her to go forth, that her daughter will be healed, and she was. We'll continue now with, we'll read verse 31 through the rest of the chapter. Excuse me. And again, departing from the coast of Tyre and Sidon, he came unto the Sea of Galilee through the midst of the coast of Decapolis. And they bring unto him one that was deaf and had an impediment in his speech, and they beseeched him to put his hand upon him. And he took him aside from the multitude and put his finger into his ears. Then he spit and touched his tongue. And looking up to heaven, he sighed and saith unto him, Ephphatha, that is, be opened. And straightway his ears were opened, and the string of his tongue was loosed, and he spake plain. And he charged them that they should tell no man, but the more he charged them, so much the more a great deal they published it. They and were beyond measure astonished, saying, He had done all things well. He maketh both the deaf to hear and the dumb to speak. As Jesus travels back towards Galilee here, he's kind of taking a back road. He's again trying to avoid meeting with the multitudes because he wants to spend some time with the apostles and get them ready for what's about to happen. He only has about another year, as we mentioned at the beginning, he only has about a year left before he knows he's going to be crucified, and he wants the apostles to be prepared. He knows he's going to give them the Holy Spirit, but he wants them to be, to try to get them to be ready to understand what's going to happen and be prepared about it, be prepared for it so that they can carry on his work. And as he went from place to place, people would recognize him or they would hear that he was there. And here would come the multitudes again. Unfortunately, they weren't all coming to hear the preaching that Jesus had to offer or the good news of the kingdom of heaven. They came for their personal needs to be healed of their various ailments and whatnot, and we can understand that. Being married to a woman that's deaf, I know there's few things in the world that you could give joy that she would appreciate more than her hearing. And so people would have a chance of something that even in this life you can't obtain easily or ever have if there hasn't been a cure found or a way to reverse a condition like that. And so this man, not only could he not hear, he couldn't speak. And it wasn't he couldn't speak because he couldn't hear. He also had some kind of deformity of his tongue or something that prevented him from speaking plainly. And Jesus healed of both of those things. And he told the man, don't go tell anybody what's happening. Of course, it's kind of like reverse psychology. The more Jesus told people not to spread this around, the faster it spread. And that caused more and more people to come to him and to see this man that had been sent from heaven to establish the New Testament. And so as we come to the conclusion of this chapter, we see that Jesus is still focused on trying to reach as many people as he can, as many of the Jews as he can, to try to explain to them and help them to understand that the kingdom of God is at hand, that the Messiah that they had been promised in the long ago by God was there, that they should embrace him and embrace his teaching. And so despite the many roadblocks that Jesus had from his own people, the Jews and Romans and everybody else that didn't believe in him, we know that the apostles went on to be known as the men that turned the world upside down. And we look in the world today and we still see how many millions of people throughout the world are influenced by the life of Jesus. They don't always worship him the way they're supposed to, but there's no doubt that no one has ever had any kind of influence over the world that Jesus has had. And so as we go into a new week, let's think about the things that were taught here both this morning and hopefully this afternoon, and help guide us to be the best Christians and examples that we can possibly be. That brings us to the conclusion of our study tonight. As always, we don't want to miss an opportunity to offer services of the church while the invitation song is led.